Since the language doesn't let you have implicit side effects, it forces you to make them explicit. And now we're back to talking about mathematics, because this requires the programmer to think more precisely about programs. That's all.
They should be doing that anyway.
I think so. And it's not a question of saying, oh, well, you programmers, you better be mathematicians, otherwise you're not being, hygienic or whatever. Mm. You know, you smell bad or something. I don't want to be pejorative about it at all. It's an invitation. Mm-hmm. It's an invitation to think more precisely about programs, and the benefits are that you will be able to have an easier time in distributed concurrent world.
Yeah, you'll have an easier time of having your application scale to a million cores.
It might do, yeah.
So, I mean, this is something, again, that's been a really big theme on Channel 9, at Microsoft, all over the industry.
Yeah.
We've had this conversation over and over and over again around, okay, a lot of people are making a huge deal of it. Some people don't think it's as big as it is, but in fact, what we have is an army of sequential programmers.
Yes.
We have an army of pretty much typed sequential programmers.
Right.
Using our suite of tools, which are very powerful.
Very powerful.
But they also need to evolve. So this is a really interesting question.
Yeah.
And I've posed this to Anders and others. You know, since so much of what, let's be honest, C# is just a very teeny little wrapper on a giant machine of functionality.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the machine being able to deal with monadic composition, monadic structures. The programmer herself or himself may not, you know, may not even need to think explicitly in terms of monads.
No.
The machine takes care of that part.
Yes.
But they have to have some way to express that, okay, I want this to follow the rule of the state monad, right?
State to state content pair.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, this is great from a theoretical approach, and Niners love this stuff, and they especially students who are learning.
Yes.
But I want to talk about the real world developers out there.
Yes.
You know, they come into work from 11 to 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
And they have code to write. They have applications they need to get done. They rely on tools.
Yes.
They're comfortable with a specific language.
Yes.
In most cases, it's type sequential.
Right.
Let's talk about their world and what you're thinking, how that's going to relate to their world.
Well, I think that as things stand today, The programming languages are not going to help you be more monadic. You'll see if you dig into the demonstration that I did with Haskell and the equivalent C# program. The C# program is much, much larger, and it's written in a kind of a strange, twisted style that would not be cuddly for an object-oriented programmer. But there are multiple efforts. Alive at Microsoft now for improving that situation. Mm-hmm. There's the High Performance Computing Initiative. There's work that Joe Duffy is doing with. It started life as P-Link. I've not been keeping track of it, but
they're doing great work for for native and
for both kind of code. And so I think for the practical real world programmer on the street who's living day to day with our stuff, that's the stuff to watch.
Okay.
Because what they're going to do is introduce these kinds of tools incrementally into C#, F# and VB. And with doing as little damage as possible to the existing object-oriented programming paradigm. They'll be adding some keywords, you add a keyword that says something is immutable, add some more keywords that say this little thing is thread safe or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've not been keeping track of the details. But at the principles, I understand what they're doing. So that's where I would want. What I'm trying to do is show you the asymptote, the heavenly, absolute pure mathematics of what's going on behind it. So these incremental improvements to the existing systems get us closer and closer and closer to this kind of level of abstract purity. If you have this is the way I work anyway.
Sure.
I normally put a concept in my mind, and then I look at something in the real world that's an approximation of that concept, and I say, okay, here are the ways in which it fits this abstract concept, and here are the ways in which it doesn't fit. And then I control the complexity in my own mind by dividing it into two camps, the things that that work with the abstraction, things that don't. Immutable data structures, you know, we have immutable data structures, but sometimes they're not really immutable. And so if, as long as you know where they're being mutated, then you can think of them as immutable everywhere else, and then that gives you the ability to, the advantage of the pure mathematical function is that it's referentially transparent. Every time you call it, you can count on it. It's a contract. Call sine of 1.1, it'll never, ever change. If you actually implemented it as a table lookup, though, somebody could go in and sneak a new value in there and mutate your table, and you'd surprise. Mm-hmm. But if it's pure mathematical, then you just kind of know where things are staying still and where things are moving. So that's what I would do. I would keep a firm eye on the
parallel computing
platform. That's right. I was hunting for the word. The PCP work.
Yep.
Those guys have this as their mission, and they know exactly, they know all this stuff that I'm talking about here, and then they know exactly what they're doing, and it's going to be great stuff.
Well, in fact, asynchronous agents in the concurrency runtime, I think built on top of the concurrency runtime for native code, is all about message passing and pipeline architectures.
That's right. And message passing is just this way of threading the state through these little mathematical functions.
Okay.
So all I'm showing is a demonstration of the absolute pure, limit point of where you would go.
The Eric Meyer sort of pure functional.
It's pure functional, and if you were, I wouldn't recommend that anybody go off and implement big systems in Haskell, although it's getting closer to that. Mm-hmm. I've never seen growth in a programming language like I've seen growth in Haskell mm-hmm. in the last 5 years. 5 years ago, Haskell was a small sort of university-flavored effort with a few dozen libraries. I looked at the website the other day, and there are hundreds of libraries on the Haskell website, and people putting it through some serious paces. So,
remember a couple of years ago now, when you worked with Eric, you made a comment, and I can't remember, I think it might have been our first video we did with you, and you talked about time warp.
Yeah.
You, at that point, were actually doing work for the VB team, and you said that your goal was to make something along the lines of VB the most powerful language in the world.
Yes.
The ability to do incredibly complex things in a very simple and elegant way.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that thinking today?
Well, VB, the landscape of programming languages has changed a little bit in the time since we talked about that video. The things that were attractive about VB then are still attractive to me now. And so far as I know, VB is still a first-class citizen along with C-sharp and F-sharp.
Absolutely.
So there we go. I think those three languages are converging in their capabilities. At the time, VB was the only guy who had late binding. And so late binding enabled me to do certain kinds of things that I couldn't do with pure static binding.
Mm-hmm.
Not without reflection, anyway, or something along those lines. I'm not sure if VB is still the only guy that has.
No, C Sharp 4.0. In fact, now it has
announced?
A static dynamic type.
It's announced.
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
So exactly announced in VC.
So these things are converging.
Yeah.
Lambda expressions are now everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
At the time we made that video, I think I had a PDC version of VB that had lambda expressions in it. And that was the only thing on the planet. But, these things are those three languages now are becoming equally powerful in my view. And so now it's kind of dealer's choice. Which one do you want to use? It's be more like the syntax that you like the best or the other advantages. I think F-sharp has more aggressive type inference than either C-sharp or VB, which enables you to write shorter programs.
Mm-hmm.
Type inference does. So that's a choice for people who want to program that way.
So
I still love them all.
So you're a scientist, and I love you were an astrophysicist. So I love the screensaver.
This is the Orion the Orion Nebula.
So as I
there's
point
the
on that,
Nebula, this is the Orion constellation.
So when when people actually watch this video. We will have already released a really cool interview that I was lucky enough to do down at JPL.
Ooh.
With the people who built the Spirit and Opportunity rovers.
Okay.
And one of the questions I asked this one of the scientists, he's sort of an executive, but he's also a scientist, roboticist.
Do you remember his name?
Jeffrey Avery or something.
No, I don't know him.
I'm okay. Sorry, I can't.
A lot of my old buds are still there.
So. I'm sure you probably know him, and I probably got his name wrong. But so it turns out that the code running on Spirit and Opportunity was written in C.
Yes.
And for them, that's like a big step up from assembler.
Yes.
So what I would ask, one of the things, you know, we always talk about concurrency, we keep pounding on concurrency. Let's set that aside for now and talk about reliability.
Yes.
You know, the code on Opportunity can't crash very often. Though it does, they've done some brilliant work with how it reboots, and they can actually, from Earth, pause a reboot sequence and then splice in fixed code that the reboot will then expect to be there.
Yes.
And it will actually continue to work.
Very nice.
It's, I mean, obviously done brilliant work, but they had to do it in C, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, what are we doing? What are you doing? What are your thoughts on building, Microsoft building really good software tools for science and for people that are sending things 100 million miles away from Earth?
Yeah. Well, as you, that's a tough one. The spacecraft programming is a whole world into itself, and as you noted, that just even moving to C from I don't know what assembler they were using, maybe 1650A. I mean, these hardened rad hardened processors that they have to send up, because you know one cosmic ray can ruin your whole day on a spacecraft.
I'm sure. One cosmic ray a day. I love
it. Yeah, you know, I do think in the very long run that the mathematical style of programming, since it is all about reasoning precisely about your programs, it cannot fail but to bring more reliability to software. Mm-hmm. It has to. Practically speaking, in the short term, no, I don't think so. I think what JPL is doing is probably the bleeding edge of the state of the art. Mm-hmm. Which they've lifted themselves up one very thin level above assembly language. C is not that far from assembly language. C is syntactic sugar on the PDP 10 instructions or PDP 11 instruction set. All of these kind of things where you may have to splice in bits of code and control the boots, that's all the continuation monad again. Coroutines and bounded coroutines, and so the fundamental mathematics of that is encoded in the continuation monad, and you're already setting me up for my next channel 9 where I show off the continuation monad. Oh, it's probably what you're doing.
Excellent.
There's some work here on the on link to events. I don't know if you've talked to any of those guys. That's
not yet.
That's Eric's group. Is that planned?
Yeah, that's planned.
Mm-hmm. That would be a beautiful thing if that ever comes.
If that ever happens, this moment is a pipe dream.
So I think that link and the functional style for the very long run, 10, 20 years out, those are going to be the ways to build in reliability. But for today, I would talk to the operating system guys and see what they have. I'm Phoenix and that's the compiler back end guys. Mm-hmm.
In the end, operating system is just something that abstracts hardware. So you want to, but they use Wind River, as their base OS.
Yes, yes.
And I was curious about, obviously it makes. Don't get me wrong, JPL is full of unusually bright people.
Yeah.
And so what they've done is probably unusually creative and excellent.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is, imagine being able not to. Talk about productivity and get to market quicker, to be able to have software composition tools for space exploration.
Yes, yes. There's a little effort called House, which is the Haskell operating users mumble.
Yeah.
Mark Jones, if you go do a search for Mark Jones and House and the Haskell operating, they're trying to write a little miniature operating system in purely compositional style in Haskell.
Nice.
And it's very small.
Okay.
That's the cool thing. What JPL wants out of these things is small, because the memories on these rad-hardened spacecraft processors are small.
Mm-hmm.
They're not physically small. They're physically large because they need to be robust. The environment in space is horrible. They're cosmic rays. I mean, I'm not joking about cosmic rays come in and change cell memory. So they have EDAC, all kinds of crazy EDAC. In fact, all of the work in binary coding theory and a lot of beautiful mathematics there, algebraic coding theory, that all came out of JPL and doing EDAC. error detection and correction on memory and on signals coming back from spacecraft. So that advances in pure mathematics arose from just dealing with the problem of memory getting zapped by cosmic rays. And
so listen, you know, this is important because, I mean, look, there are monads on Mars.
There are monads on Mars.
There are monads on Mars today, as we speak.
Excellent.
And two rovers.
Yeah. They know about monads, and they're putting monads in their system. We win.
Right on.
Go, go, monad team. Go, go, monad team.
That's excellent. So, you know, let's...
Should we finish off the tree?
Let's finish off the tree, but let's also, you know, make sure that it's clear that everyone, you know, understands what they're looking at again.
Yeah.
I think we all have memorized what you asked us to memorize.
State-to-state content pair.
Yes.
Now, and you remember how I threaded the state around in the non-monadic tree labeler?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the monadic tree labeler. Here's the non-monadic one again. Let me flip forward to page 4. Okay, here we go. Here is an instance of the state monad. It takes in a state, and it produces a state and contents pair. In this case, the state and contents are of the same type, S.
Okay.
This is a function that takes in a state and produces a state-content pair, and all it does is bump the state. Remember how we bumped the state when we were labeling the leaf on a tree? Here is a monad maker that takes in some contents and produces a function from state to state contents pair. And all this does is thread A into the output of the monad that is produced. This is a notation, a graphical notation for creating a closure. This arrow that pierces the box here and pierces the box there without an arrowhead is actually producing a closure. So this guy down below, the new little monad that the monad maker is named Return. The instance of the monad that it produces is a state-to-state contents pair. It closes over variable A. Okay, make monad on a leaf of X. Remember, we have just two cases to cover, leaf and branch. So here's make monad of branch. I couldn't fit them on one page. Make monad of leaf of X takes in a tree that happens to be just a leaf, strips off the leaf constructor, sends the value down in here, and this makes a monad. Monad is a state to state contents pair. And this monad internally is built up by binding a pair of monads. More carefully, an instance of the update state monad that I talked about, and a function, a monad maker, a function of n that returns the leaf. So it sends one n up here into a pair, and you can read all of this stuff. That calls return and produces this thing out the back. So remember how I wired the monad things together. There's only one way to wire them together, by this bind operator, which is select many. That's exactly what I'm doing here. That's what the pink lines are doing. That's a bind through select many, or the bind operator that sticks things together. There's only one way to do it.
Excellent.
And now if we go look at the way it branches in a tree, it's a little cleaner in some ways because things can flow more linearly, and I don't have... The update state monad does not appear here.
Hmm.
It only appears in the leaf case, where I have to update the state. The only thing that appears here in a branch is a recursive call to make monad right, and make monad... I don't have to fill in all this stuff. This is a monad maker, produces a function from state to state monad pair, and I just glue things together in the only way they can be glued together. There's no wiggle room.
Hmm.
The result of the left gets sent into... The result of the left gets sent over here to a new call of branch. The result of the right gets... The contents part of the result of the right gets sent over to branch. The state keeps getting threaded through on the bottom. And out you go through return. And the result is of type... the result of make monad is of type something that takes in a non-labeled tree and produces a labeled tree in a state, because it hooks together the monads internally. The state doesn't. So this is the win that you get over the non-monadic part. You don't have to feed in the state at the top level. It's threaded through automatically. It's just hanging there. These functions don't do anything until you actually call them. So the result of this entire computation is a function from state to state content pair. Well, we heard that before. It's an instance of the monad. When I call it, I feed in zero, I get back out the answer. So here's where I call it down here in the Haskell version. M label right here. There's the zero. That's how that prime. Everything else is just priming the pump. That starts the pump going, and it chains through all these little functions and spits out the result. So I just to finish off the example here, what I did was at the end of the C-sharp version of this, I left some exercises.
Great.
The exercise, not 10 exercises.
Wow, this is awesome.
One, generalize over the type of the state from int to any type S. So the state monad type can handle any kind of state object. Exercise two, go from labeling a tree to doing a constrained container computation as in Windows Presentation Foundation. Mm-hmm. That's stacking things inside stack panels or something like that, right?
Okay.
That's just state threading. Should be able to generalize that. Exercise three, promote the return and bind into an abstract class, M. So I just wrote them out in straight up. You know, but it'd be nice to make the monad an abstract class. In Haskell, it's called a type class.
Excellent.
So you say that labeled tree is an instance of the state monad. So exercise three is do that in C#. Exercise four, which is hard, is go from a binary tree to an NRA tree. That's hard. Exercise five, abstract from NRA tree to IEnumerable and do the whole thing in link.
Nice.
Just throw away everything I did and do it with link and select many. Exercise six, look up monadic parser combinators. Just do a search and you'll find Eric Meyer there, of course. And implement an elegant parser library using link. Link over parsers.
Nice.
You make, just this one idea, mm-hmm. you can make link over parsers and build a parser library so that you can build up arbitrary, make your own compiler.
Awesome. I wonder if Bart DeSmet will be the first one to do that.
I don't know. Exercise seven, verify the monad laws, either abstractly or mechanically, for this state monad. The monad laws are, they're associative, and return on the left and return on the right are units.
Okay.
And exercise eight, design an interface for the operator's return and bind and rewrite the state monad so that it implements the interface. That's an alternative to the abstract class idea. But in the light of what I was saying about the monad laws, it might be easier to do associativity and the unit laws in an interface than in an abstract class. Nine, look up the list monad and implement that so it implements the same interface, monad interface. And then exercise 10, deconstruct this entire example by using destructive updates in objects. In other words, rewrite this whole thing in object-oriented style with assignment. And do it in a disciplined way that treats the entire CLR and heap memory as a state monad.
Amazing.
So treat the CLR as the state monad and thread it through. Now you could deal with multiple CLRs by compositionally binding these instances of the state monad. If the entire CLR and heap memory is an instance of the state monad, then you ought to be able to compose together multiple CLRs by the monadic bind operator. So that's a semester project. Maybe
well,
a year.
This is great. Now, what? How should we go about? You know, these people can just do this on their own. I'd like to have some of these answers come back from the community onto Channel 9.
That's what I would
and
like.
You
to do
have
too.
To take a look at them.
Yes,
but you don't, might not have time to be like the professor here and go
no.
through everybody's answers.
No,
but if we provide a way for them to ship up, they should probably just use the sandbox. Which well, you already have on Channel 9.
So right. far, everything I've seen on Channel 9, there are so many brilliant people out there. Yeah. And somebody is going to take this like a piece of raw meat thrown
yeah.
to the tigers, right? And is going to go completely nuts and do much more than I'd be able to do with it. So
cool.
So these are just my little challenges to the community at large. But that's such an amazing group of people you've got watching Channel 9. It's neat.
Absolutely.
And it's I have to say, it's a privilege to be able to talk to them, and I appreciate it.
Cool. Well, hey, thank you for coming on C9.
All right.
And we'll be back.
Good.
I mean, probably God knows when. I mean, you're a busy guy.
Well, you're challenged. You've helped me challenge myself with the continuation monad
and more on Mars.
That one hurts. Yeah. Okay.
Take
Very
care.
Good. Thanks, Charles.